This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of February 2018. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 16th of February 2018. And welcome to the Wistricken District Talking Newspaper, because we've got extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 16th of February. And this week they've been edited by Jane Thomas, Linda Vincent, Keith Vincent and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are smart M3 disruption, mill fundraising falls short but repair work is set to start, and plastic straw campaign gains business support. So here we have the story behind the first headline, please. Heather.
Smart M3 disruption. Drivers are bracing themselves for years of disruption as highway bosses plan to turn a 10-mile stretch of the M3 into a smart motorway in a bid to cut journey times. The £139 million project would be one of the biggest road schemes undertaken in South Hampshire in recent years, converting both carriageways between junctions 9 at Winchester and 14 at Eastleigh. But the works are expected to clash with two other major road schemes, with fears motorists might be caught up in miles upon miles of cones and narrow lanes. Highways England says the hard shoulder would be turned into a fourth lane to improve traffic flow, while emergency refuge areas would be fitted along the length of the scheme. New CCTV cameras and electronic information signs would also be installed. As a result, highway bosses claim the scheme, which will start in March 2020 and last 2 years, will provide greater capacity, improve traffic flow, cut journey times and reduce accidents. There are also improvements planned at Junction 9 of the M3 near Winchester, joining it with the A34 from March 2021 to March 2023. And meanwhile, the M27 will be upgraded between junctions 4 and 11 between March this year and March 2021. The proposal for the M3 follows severe traffic, which greeted commuters on Tuesday after a vehicle broke down at the Junction 9 interchange with the A34 at Winnell, with vehicles stretching back past Eastleigh. On Monday, there were two breakdowns in roughly the same area that also caused major delays. So leader of Winchester City Council, Caroline Horrill, said, "We are pleased that vital road improvements will take place to the motorways that serve our district." Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "We welcome the investment to improve the South's infrastructure. I have seen smart motorways work well elsewhere in the United Kingdom and know it will help alleviate pressure on our network at peak times, as well as support our local and national economy. However, it is now vitally important we work in partnership with Highways England and the other councils in the area to minimise disruption as much as possible during the construction. This will include coordinating works on local diversion routes and communicating with residents and businesses to keep traffic flowing as best we can during this time." Jack Cousins, head of roads policy for the AA, said, "Well, roadworks are a pain at the best of times, but three major schemes in close proximity to each other and running at the same time may be rather excessive. We hope that throughout the planning process, Highways England can find ways to mitigate a worst-case scenario where drivers are caught up in miles upon miles of cones and narrow lanes." A Highways England spokesperson said, "We are currently designing the smart motorway. We have begun discussions with local authorities and technical stakeholders and will continue our design work and environmental assessments. Smart motorways cut congestion and lead to safer, quicker, more reliable and better journeys for motorists. We always work hard to keep traffic moving during roadworks and try to keep delays to an absolute minimum." Smart motorways use pioneering technology to manage traffic at busy times, such as by changing the speed limit, activating warning signs, and closing lanes if necessary. The scheme will be the second on the M3 after a 13-mile stretch between Farnborough and the M25 was upgraded at a cost of £174 million between 2014 and 2017. There have been criticisms about the emergency lay-bys and use of the fourth lane.
Sorry. Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Mill fundraising falls short, but repair work is set to start. The manager at one of Winchester's most historic buildings has said that they have been overwhelmed by the public's support after raising thousands of pounds towards repairs. Winchester's City Mill, the oldest working water mill in Britain that dates back more than 1,000 years, has been under threat following major flood damage in 2014. The National Trust launched an appeal last February to raise £125,000 towards the repairs. It has since reached £91,800, with £25,000 put in by the National Trust, meaning that work can begin on the building at Bridge Street. Property manager Rick Weeks said, "We've been overwhelmed by the public support through the year. It really confirms to us how highly regarded the place is for the people of Winchester. The support means we can start the project as quickly as possible to do the place up and make the fixes that are needed." He added that work is set to begin at the end of February and beginning of March, with the option to source any final funding if needed. The true extent of damage to the building, which has stood in the city since Saxon times, was only discovered in its basement 6 months after heavy flooding in 2014. Serious structural problems were revealed, including severe deterioration of the beams and joists. Emergency propping has had to be installed to provide support to the building. A number of fundraising events have been held to raise money for the vital works, including concerts, coffee mornings, and a 1,400 rubber duck river race. And there are three pictures. There's one conventional picture of the mill looking beautiful, and then there's a picture of property manager Rick Weeks looking very serious, pictured with the vital supports at the bottom, and then a picture of the flooding inside the mill on February the 7th, 2014, and it really looks devastating. The water is rushing through the basement place.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is Plastic Straw Campaign Gains Business Support. A Winchester mum who launched a campaign to reduce plastic waste has had a number of businesses pledge their support. Final Straw Winchester aims to stop bars, cafes and restaurants from offering single-use plastic straws. Michelle Ingerslev, 38, has succeeded in getting the King's Charles Pub in Kingsworthy, Big Little Me, the Bell Inn in St Cross and Shococo Chocolates on the High Street to get involved. Michelle of Park Road said, "I'm delighted by the way the campaign has been received. I'm an ordinary, busy, working mum of two, running the campaign in my spare time, and I'm hoping to make a difference to reduce single-use plastics in the beautiful city where I live." Michelle launched the campaign 3 weeks ago and hopes that if businesses continue to offer straws, they will offer environmentally friendly alternatives made of paper. Dawn Anker, owner of the King Charles Pub in Kingsworthy, said, "One of my staff has been on at me for a while to switch to using paper straws. When I saw the Final Straw Winchester campaign, I decided to investigate and was amazed at how long it takes for just one plastic straw to break down. It was then that I decided we'd ditch the plastic straws in favour of recyclable paper straws." Annalise de Fraser, owner of Big Little Me, a role-play group for children, said, "I saw the Final Straw Winchester campaign on Facebook and decided to join, as being responsible with our environment is the heart of my business. Not only am I trying to incorporate messages for children on how we can all be responsible with the environment, but I want to operate as one. I worked in corporate responsibility for over 20 years, but now I'm very happy to have a business where I can pledge that we won't ever use plastic straws. It's great to support this little local campaign, and I hope many others will follow." And this is accompanied by three photos, one of Michelle Ingerslev, who launched the Final Straw Winchester, looking very happy, one of Annalise de Fraser with a Big Little Me poster, a world of make-believe, and also carrying the Final Straw poster, which features a blue circle, a light blue circle, with Final Straw in big white letters on it, and a red and white straw forming the I and the T of those two words. And a final one is of the King Charles pub, with Dawn Anker also holding up one of the Final Straw posters.
And that concludes our headline stories. Welcome again to the Talking Newspaper of the 16th of February 2018. And we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, My Winchester, historical items, Belgarum Diary and editorial comment. We'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Baker, Trevor Charles Baker, late of Hampshire County Council, Winchester, peacefully in Southampton General Hospital, aged 62. Barney, Wayman Patrick Carl Barney, at home in France. Chalk, Kenneth Lawson Chalk, aged 85. Hill, David Hill, peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 78. Hutchings, Nicola Hutchings, at home peacefully, aged 55. North, Leonard David North, aged 89. Vinnell, David Robert Vinnell. And finally, Wyatt, Ron Wyatt, peacefully in West Holme Nursing Home, aged 89. Now we've got Christian Comment, and it's read by Jane this week.
Christian Comment this week is the origins of Lent. Yesterday was Ash Wednesday, as well as being St. Valentine's Day, and as such is the first of the 40 days of Lent, the period in the year that both recalls the 40 days Christ spent being tempted in the wilderness at the start of his ministry, and serves as preparation for Easter. Wearing sackcloth and ashes used to mean what it says. In ancient times, when you wanted to show acknowledgement of and repentance for your wrongdoing, you wore sackcloth and covered yourself with ashes. The legacy of this tradition is the tiny smudge of ashes in the shape of a cross some Christians receive on their foreheads on Ash Wednesday as a sign of their unworthiness. These ashes are usually made from burning some of the palm crosses kept from the previous year's Palm Sunday and mixing either with holy water or oil. The custom almost certainly dates from the 8th century, when it is recorded in the writings of an Anglo-Saxon teacher called Aelfred. The practice may well owe something to Jewish customs. At a number of points in the Old Testament, there is a mention of a mourner covering himself with ashes or dust. The English word for Lent is derived from the Old English lenctum, which means simply springtime, and possibly refers to the lengthening of the daylight. The observance of Lent certainly predates that of Ash Wednesday, but its origins are disputed. For the first three centuries of church's existence, there was considerable diversity and debate about the practice of fasting before Easter. What we do know is that in the year 331, St. Athanasius wrote a pastoral letter to his people, instructing them to observe a period of 40 days of fasting before the stricter fast of Holy Week. This, of course, raises the question of when is Lent? Many people will assume it is from Ash Wednesday until the Saturday just before Easter Sunday, but this is 46 days, unless you exclude Sundays, which are considered to be festivals since they mark Christ's resurrection. Others follow Athanasius in saying Lent lasts the 40 days from Ash Wednesday until Palm Sunday, when the stricter observances of Holy Week begin. Gradually, the observance of 40 fasting days became common practice. Some say the 40 days reflect the hours Jesus spent in the tomb or the 40 years the Israelites spent in the wilderness. Usually, it is said to mark the period Jesus stayed in the wilderness or desert fasting and being tempted by the devil. The fasting during Lent was meant to mean giving up meat and eating just one full meal in 24 hours, although the size of this meal was not prescribed. This has echoes of the Muslim festival of Ramadan. It was only later that other animal products such as eggs, milk and cheese were also banned, hence the Shrove Tuesday tradition of using up eggs and milk in pancakes. Also, a light breakfast was permitted. Nowadays in this country, fasting is rare, and only a few give something up for Lent. It is now more common for a period of study and reflection, or trying to do something positive. Some still observe the ceremony of the ashes. And that was from Rosemary A. Baker.
And it's time for letters to the editor. Now, you can contact the Hampshire Chronicle three different ways. You can telephone 01962 860 836. You can send an email to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can send a written letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And there are eight letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Bring on £350 million. Mark Rowe writes, Sir, in a democratic referendum, the vote to leave the UK... I'm going to start again, sorry. In a democratic referendum, the vote was leave the EU and this should be respected. Otherwise, it would make a joke of our precious democracy that many people have fought and died for. Plus, in my view, we do not owe the EU a single penny. The process of leaving is taking too long. Yes, things have to be worked out, but how much is it costing the taxpayer for this fiasco of a stalled leaving? This money could go towards the NHS and other services of which are great underfunded. Many may disagree with my view, but this is their right to say. Mark Rowe signs himself Winchester English Democrats, Tapling Close, Week, Winchester.
And Jeff Naylor says, squeeze the pips. Sir, the Shadow Chancellor John Macdonald's communitarian approach to some of the former nationalised industries has much to commend it, but if anything, is too generous to shareholders. Labour's proposal to compensate shareholders with government bonds doesn't appear to take into account the huge amount paid to directors and shareholders in mind-boggling salaries and dividends since they were privatised. Privatisation of natural public monopolies operated in the common interest effectively turned customers into cash milk cows for a few people who had the interest, ability and funds to buy shares. The proposed stakeholderisation of these services will restore some justice to the situation, but many may feel the companies will be getting off lightly. Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
And Raymond Knight writes, Sack managers. Sir, each winter NHS bosses cry out that they cannot cope with the increased demand for services and need more money. The time must come soon when politicians of all parties ask the basic question, which is why this is happening. The answer is to say we did not have these problems in the 1980s and early 1990s, so why now? If they took a look at how the NHS was run at that time, they would see that GPs did home visits, organised deputising services to cover out of hours, both of which remove the need for patients to go to A&E departments or call an ambulance. Each hospital had a small management committee taking decisions, not as we now have, more managers than medical staff all fighting each other for more money and spending all their time in useless meetings. Hospital wards were kept open, meaning that if A&E needed to admit a patient, then in the majority of cases, a bed was available. Patients had their operations when planned, irrespective of the time of year. Politicians must accept that the changes brought in by the Blair government in the late 1990s have failed and have the backbone to admit it and then revert back to the system which worked and was in place in the 1980s and 90s when the NHS was run for the benefit of the patients and not for the creation of so-called managers who would not last 2 minutes in industry. The NHS does not need more money. But if all NHS trust members were removed and 99.9% of all hospital managers sacked and replaced with qualified medical staff, making medical decisions on redistributing the funds available, the NHS would once again belong to the population and not the incompetent managers. An NHS think tank has already stated that the NHS is managed by incompetent staff, but politicians have failed to take notice. Labour's continued call for more funds show how out of touch they are, or their failure to admit that they were the ones that created the problem. And that was from Raymond Knight of Broadway, Newport.
Myth of the Blitz. And this refers to a letter from Councillor Eileen Berry in February the 8th. Councillor Eileen Berry seems to be putting her faith in some sort of spirit of the Blitz to see good, solid working people through a bumpy 2018. She is confident that they will do just as well this coming year as they did with the last, and also hopes they are paid a living wage. The sad fact is that many working people are not doing well at all. The national minimum wage is only £7.50 per hour for over 25s, and even the non-statutory living wage, £8.75, is totally inadequate. The marginal increase due in April will make little difference. For those unable to work at all due to health problems and disabilities, the future looks bleak indeed. Benefits are being cut at an alarming rate. And it's worth remembering that this also affects people in work who rely on a bit of extra help with high rents and travelling expenses. How does Councillor Berry's concern for working people, or her Tory colleagues' professed enthusiasm for affordable housing, the NHS, etc., square with their continuing support for a government with a low-wage economy and privatisation agenda, which is destroying public services and punishing the poor? Is it a case of stupidity or hypocrisy? Can't they recognise the irony in using the recent opening of a food bank as a ribbon-cutting photo op for the local MP, while lavishing their patronising praise on volunteers struggling to ameliorate the devastating impact of Conservative austerity policies? Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Ian Tate writes about pigeon problems. Sir, in the Bilgaram section of your paper, Chronicle February the 8th, reference was made about my concerns regarding pigeons in the centre of Winchester. The item was written in such a way as to possibly make light of the issue. Whilst I accept that there are many more important problems facing the city, I have to disagree with Bilgaram over the extent of this problem. Hammond's Passage can be particularly unpleasant at times, as can the passage between the square and the High Street, and there is a serious problem with the entrance to the Guild Hall, as pigeons regularly roost there with all the associated pigeon mess. The Brook Centre has long been plagued by roosting pigeons around the entrance, and I note that the planning application to erect doors on all the entrances has recently been approved, thus limiting the impact of pigeons congregating there. The Buttercross has suffered from pigeons, and I'm aware that the City Council's Historic Environment Department have serious concerns about the issue with the damage that has taken place to this Grade 2 listed Schedule Ancient Monument. Whilst Winchester isn't in the same position as the pre-Ken Livingstone Trafalgar Square, I would suggest that the problem of pigeons is greater than your article implies. Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Winchester.
And Roger Harrison of Itchen Stoke Mill writes Itchen Pollution. Sir, Bakkavor's defence in last week's issue of the Chronicle, February the 8th, of the Alsford salad washing plant is disingenuous. The imported and local salad vegetables filling a vast number of small plastic bags for supermarkets may well be washed in the headwaters of the Itchen without the addition of chemicals, but the effluent from the daily factory washdown, which goes straight to the river, contains chemicals that the manufacturer's safety data sheets clearly state should not be released to waterways and are harmful to aquatic life with long-term effects. It is worth questioning the vigilance and competence of the Environment Agency's Sheffield-based licensing staff in having allowed this to happen. Another Hampshire salad washing plant, owned by a much smaller enterprise than Bakkavor, was obliged by the same agency years ago to connect its chemical outflow to the sewer at a current cost to it of about £40,000 a year, despite its river having none of the protection of the SAC-rated Itchen. So, by using the river as a drain, Bakkavor, while polluting it, have managed to avoid this inconvenient cost for years. A cursory examination of the river below the factory outflow demonstrates that it has practically none of the profuse invertebrate life natural to the headwater of a chalk stream. The factory effluent must be connected to a sewer, and the near 5,000 people who have so far signed the petition against a new licence are absolutely correct. And that was from Roger Harrison of Itchen Stoke Mill, Itchen Stoke, Alsford.
Origins of the Pagoda House, and there's a picture of a fascinating looking house at the top of St James's Lane. It gets described a bit in the letter. Michael Carden writes, "Sir, it was most interesting to read the article in your columns about Richard Adams, owner of the Pagoda House," that was in February the 8th's Chronicle. "For the record, however, he didn't buy the house, but built it on top of an existing single-storey octagonal brick and flint cottage, which was the lodge at the western entrance to a development of villas running downhill to the present St James's Crescent, where there was a matching eastern lodge. He had already bought the semi-detached villas that adjoin Pagoda House as accommodation for visiting guests, whom he invited to discuss the revolutionary politics of Europe at that time. He needed a separate house for himself when in Winchester, and conceived the remarkable idea of building it on top of the lodge, overcoming its diminutive floor plan by cantilevering his new upper floors out over the walls of the lodge, which can still be seen as part of the recessed ground floor. The striking effect of this construction was further exaggerated by adding a balcony that ran round the whole of the south elevation. Whether the effect this conveyed of a pagoda-like dwelling, or whether he wanted a Chinese-style house from the start, his architect embellished the house so that in early illustrations it is detailed to look like Chinese one, complete with dragons and bells. It's white, the main building, or grey, and it has beautifully elaborate window panes. It's really very attractive. Over the years and in other hands, the house was considerably enlarged until it fell on hard times and was somewhat crudely converted by Winchester City Council into three flats. On conversion back to a house, various owners struggled with the upkeep of this unconventional building that tended to sag around its perimeter, until at the turn of the century it was bought by Mr. and Mrs. Gattonby, who, with my involvement and the great skill of craftsman builder Stuart Moore, embarked on a programme of structural repair and restoration, bringing back many original features and at the same time creating a charming house fit for 21st century living. Michael Carden, MBE, AA Dip, RIBA, Edgar Road, Winchester."
And Peter Rees salutes NHS heroes. "Sir, Hampshire Hospital Trust and University Hospital Southampton Trust are magnificent. So are the wonderful, dedicated and tireless workers who literally work until they drop. Throughout these troubled times, they give their time, energy and supreme dedication to us, their patients. They do so against the relentless and totally inappropriate and meaningless targets set by this government during a period of increased demand and reduced capacity. They do their utmost. Hampshire, A&E target, 95% to be seen within 4 hours, achieved 74.9%. Cancer care target, 85%, achieved 81.4%. Planned operations target, 92%, exceeded 92.6%. Southampton, A&E target, 95%, achieved 83.2%. Cancer care target, 85%, virtually achieved 84.5%. Planned operations target, 92%, achieved 82.3%. We have a health service being brought to its knees by a government that prioritises privatisation over patient care. For 7 years, it has master-planned the stealthy NHS sell-off through secrecy and lack of democratic accountability. Hospitals are cancelling urgent and elective surgery for cancer, heart disease and other serious conditions. There is an overall shortage of staff, reduced provision of acute care and intensive care beds. There are currently 40,000 nurse vacancies across the UK not being filled by temporary staff because there are no more EU staff available. They have left permanent positions because their residence in the UK has been denied by draconian Brexit threats. There is a shortage of skilled radiologists and radiographers, creating up to a 2-year backlog of X-ray and scan analysis. Between 2016 and 2017, 1,193 GPs left the NHS and were not replaced. The government target is 5,000 more GPs by 2020, laughable in its lack of realism in the current situation. Beneath this progressively cataclysmic erosion, we have an MP and a government that will simply not listen to the electorate, pursuing the non-stop sell-off of the nation's most valued public service. The persevering and indefatigable NHS staff who cherish and guard the health of the nation should be given our total and unswerving support and praise. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. Councillor Ian Tait, who we saw in a letter recently, said that the city has a serious pigeon problem. We asked locals if they agreed. Heather has the answers.
Eric Smith, aged 78, retired MOD worker from Stapley Lane in Ropley, said, "Probably, but they seem to stay around the bus station. The council should concern itself with more important issues like finding homeless people's places to go." Natasha Lake, aged 21, a bar worker of Hyde Close, Winchester, said, "Well, I don't see it as a problem. Pigeons are everywhere. I don't think there's anything much to worry about. It's a fuss over nothing." Gordon Jaques, aged 83, retired coach driver of Mead Road, St Cross, said, "I don't think they're a problem. Pigeons have been around as long as human beings. A pigeon does a lot of good work collecting scraps that people throw away." And last of all, Dean Dyson, aged 62, a musician from Four Marks near Alsford, said, "If there is a problem, I've never noticed it. I've not been dive-bombed by any of them in all the time I've been playing here."
Now we're going back through the mist of time for historical news items from our dusty files, and we'll start with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was Friday, February the 19th, 1993. Hampshire has settled on a budget that will make its council tax the lowest in England, at just under £370 for Band D properties. The amount is 4% under the government standard spending assessment, what it thinks the council needs to meet its commitments, and has allowed Hampshire a £5 million windfall. Members of the HCC Policy and Resources Committee learned from the county treasurer, John Scotford, this was because interest rates were down, there was a much better cash flow from government, and Hampshire had been successful in rating appeals over schools. And the second item is environmental experts have prompted renewed action from M3 campaigners in their bid to save Twyford Down from bulldozers. Around 170 people attended a meeting at Winchester's Guild Hall on Sunday, where speakers convinced protesters it was still not too late to put a stop to the M3 route across the historic hillside. The meeting, entitled Losses and Lessons of Twyford, was called by David Gee, ex-director of Friends of the Earth and presenter of Channel 4's environmental series Our Backyard, which featured Twyford Down.
Go back 50 years, Heather.
Saturday, February the 17th, 1968. And the first item says, within a stone's throw of the police station and a matter of feet beneath the bedroom occupied by the sub-postmaster, burglars blew open a safe at White Hill sub-post office, making off with £1,000 cash and another £1,600 in certificates, premium bonds, postal orders and stamps. It happened early on Sunday morning, and although roadblocks were set up with very little delay, the raiders slipped the net. The police used tracker dogs in an effort to trace the burglars, who awoke the sub-postmaster at about 5 a.m. as they left the premises. They got in by forcing a panel off the front door, exactly opposite White Hill Police Station. There were signs of an unsuccessful attempt to break one of the windows. And the second item celebrates Eastleigh's oldest resident, Mrs. Jane Miles of 60 Newton Road. It celebrated her 102nd birthday on Sunday. In spite of failing eyesight, Mrs. Miles is alert and active, gets up almost every day and was able to take one or two trips out last summer. Her hearing is still reasonably good, and she has a remarkably retentive memory. A native of Somerset, Mrs. Miles has lived in Eastleigh for nearly 80 years and is never happier than when talking to old friends about life in the town in former days. Mrs. Miles is the widow to former railway man Mr. S.J. Miles, who died in 1903. She has two daughters, two grandchildren, four great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandson in Canada. Those who visited her to offer birthday congratulations included Eastleigh's other centenarian, Mrs. Pauline Ashcroft of 7 Percos Close, Chandler's Ford, who was 101 last October.
I was going to take us back 100 years.
Yes, two items from Saturday, February the 16th, 1918. The new order, a preliminary announcement regarding which was made some days ago, has now been issued by the Board of Trade, consolidating and amending the present motor spirit restriction orders and controlling the use of gas for driving motor vehicles. So far as private motor cars are concerned, no substantial change is made to their use. New regulations have been added to the order relating to taxicabs and to hackney carriages not licensed to ply for hire, and the Defence of the Realm regulations, which dealt with the latter, have now been repealed. Motor cabs licensed to ply for hire by the police or local authority may be used for any purpose whatever, but only within the area for which they are licensed and to any point 3 miles beyond. The purposes for which hackney carriages not licensed to ply for hire may be driven are fully set out and are in substance they are the same as those for which a private car may be driven. And the second item, Alfred Beckett was charged with unlawfully ill-treating and assaulting his son, aged 14, in a manner likely to cause unnecessary suffering or injury to health, to which he pleaded not guilty. Mr. R.J. Harris, who prosecuted for the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, said the defendant was a widower and a very industrious man, but the charge related to excessive chastisement of the boy. The whole trouble, apparently, was that defendant had had an uncontrollable temper. Inspector Arnold spoke as to seeing wounds on the boy's head, which he said had been caused by his father striking him. When he warned the defendant on a previous occasion, he said he would do it again, law or no law. In reply to the defendant, the witness said he could not say the wounds were caused by a stick.
And Jane's going to take us back 200 years.
And there are two items from 200 years ago, which was Monday, February the 16th, 1818. A melancholy circumstance occurred on Saturday in the bang-up post coach on its journey from Liverpool to Birmingham. A young woman, apparently 14 or 15 years of age, and in the last stage of consumption, had been advised to try the effect of her native air, and was proceeding to Birmingham for that purpose in the company of her grandmother. After travelling upwards of 40 miles, she became quite exhausted from fatigue and debility, not being enabled to take any breakfast or to leave the coach when it stopped for that purpose in Knutsford, a distance of 30 miles from Liverpool. On arriving at the next stage, she took a little milk and shortly afterwards reclined on the arm of her grandmother to sleep, in which state she expired without a struggle or groan. So unconscious was her grandmother of her departure that she only became acquainted with it on the approach of the coach to Newcastle, when a gentleman who was seated opposite her, until then had been asleep, perceived the great alteration which had taken place in the young woman. And the second item. On Tuesday, S. Smith, a footman in Mr. Tierney's family, was taken before the magistrate at Marlborough Street in a state of intoxication and charged by the butler with assaulting him. The prosecutor deposed that as he was busy in his pantry, he heard a great noise upstairs and the bell of the breakfast parlour ringing violently. He instantly ran upstairs and found the ladies very much alarmed and the defendant strutting about the room. On his attempting to remove him, he hit him so violently on the head as almost to prevent his seeing for some moments, not contented with which he followed him downstairs into the kitchen and renewed the assault in a most outrageous manner.
And we'll get back to the present now, because Heather has got the editorial comment to read.
Failing to heed the lessons of the past. You wait ages for road improvement schemes and then three come along at once. Over the next few years, we will see the project to radically alter the M3 Junction 9 interchange at Winnall, and also a newly announced £139 million scheme to change a 10-mile stretch from Junction 9 to Junction 14 into a smart motorway. The hard shoulder could be converted into a fourth lane at peak times to improve traffic flow. On top of this, there's also plans to upgrade the M27 from Junction 4 at Chilworth near Southampton to Junction 11 at Fareham. Taking a short term and simplistic view, these schemes would be welcomed, increasing the capacity of major roads, cutting journey times, and potentially reducing accidents. However, there is a major catch. It's been proved time and time again that increasing capacity will simply increase demand. There will be a short-term improvement, but then in a few years' time, the congestion will be just as bad. Much more needs to be done to reduce the need for these roads to be constantly enlarged. Major investment is needed in public transport, such as railways and buses, getting freight off the roads and onto trains. And more needs to be done to encourage cycling and walking. The environmental battles of the 1990s, started by the M3 through Twyford Down, made the issue clear. But we still haven't learnt the lessons.
And this week's first person is written by George Hayter, and it's going to be read by Noel.
Yes, the title is Thirsty Work Filling a Bucket by George Hayter. Most of us hate it. From plastic bags blowing around Winchester to empty bottles rammed into hedges on the downs, litter is upsetting. The dismay hurts. The thoughtlessness of some of our fellow citizens. And we pay through taxes. Britain's annual bill for sweeping up litter is almost £1 billion. That's enough to pay for 150 new schools each year, or buy a third of an aircraft carrier, or build 20,000 social homes. Lots of things have been tried to counter the curse of willfully jettisoned debris. There would be more mess in Winchester if it wasn't for unsung teams of volunteer litter pickers who deserve the thanks of us all. 2 years ago, literally hundreds of volunteers in Winchester joined the Clean for the Queen campaign. Before that, Hampshire County Council leader Roy Perry helped on a community litter pick day. Since 1955, the Keep Britain Tidy campaign has used awards and other programmes to help shame litter bugs. Legislation is being stepped up, with the maximum on-the-spot fine due to increase to £150, whether the litter is dropped by a pedestrian or thrown from a car. 3 weekends ago, I came across a private sector idea which could play a small part nationally if copied by other UK businesses. Walking in Dorset, my three companions and I had paused to admire a view of the Lyme Bay coast when I noticed an advert tied to a post. The A4 poster said the nearby pub would provide a free hot drink to anyone who filled a bucket with litter. I asked my walking companions if any of them were thirsty and then drew their attention to the sign. They weren't up for it. No time, one said. It would take too long. I had to admit that there didn't appear to be much litter around the pub, so filling a bucket could take all morning. Of course, the absence of rubbish suggested the pub's rubbish for hot drink scheme was a sparkling success. Anyway, talk of hot drinks had made my fellow walkers thirsty, and they headed into the pub for a quick mid-morning cuppa. I thought I might have time to try the free offer, so I slinked off to ask one of the staff for a bucket. The waitress also handed me a litter picker, a 3-foot pole with a trigger at one end and a tweezer-like gripper at the other. I began on the pub's own premises, zooming in on grass at the bottom of the perimeter fence, where I found bits of snack wrappers and a straw. I soon tucked the litter picker under my arm. It was too slow. It seemed quicker to pick up the rubbish with my bare hands. It was quite a luxurious pub, and I knew I'd be able to wash my hands thoroughly in hot water afterwards. Expanded polystyrene, string tissues, plastic bags, a plastic toy, a bit of an old glove. The bucket was soon half full. Venturing onto the lane, I struck garbage gold with big paper bags and a plastic cup. It would have been quicker to fill the bucket by collecting only large items such as crisp packets and cans, but conscientiously I stopped constantly for little bits too. Like a runaway vacuum cleaner, I cleansed the lay-by of rubbish big and small before moving on to a ditch where I alighted on a trash treasure in the form of a plastic hat and part of a car. With an estimated 100 items crammed in, the bucket was full. Earning my hot drink had taken just 11 minutes. I handed in the bucket, washed my hands, and found my companions in the bar with 4 hot drinks. At first, the 3 of them doubted my full bucket achievement, but when we were charged for only 3 of our 4 drinks, I was finally believed and enjoyed a brief acclaim as a litter hero.
Over to Jane, because she's got question and answer, My Winchester.
And that this week is Natalie Forsyth, 39, a barmaid of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, who shares her favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? The Forte Tea Room on Parchment Street, the best breakfast in Winchester with lovely staff. What's your favourite pub or bar? The Sportsman's Club on Cromwell Road in Stanmore. It's great working because they have the best bar staff in Winchester. What's your favourite shop? White Stuff and Pandora. I love the clothes and jewellery, but mostly for the excellent customer service I've received in the past. What's your favourite building? We are lucky to have some amazing architecture in Winchester, but my favourite building has to be the cathedral. It's absolutely stunning. What's your favourite view? Well, the view from the top of St Giles's Hill at the viewpoint, you can see the whole of Winchester from up there. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Oh, Jane Austen. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Chilcombe, the most beautiful village in Winchester with stunning views. What is the best thing about Winchester? Everything. I love where I live. It's a fantastic place to bring up children, and the people are great. And the worst? Well, there's not much of a nightlife for younger people, but it is improving. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Nothing. It is perfect just the way it is. Describe Winchester in a sentence. The most beautiful city in England.
And Belgarum Diary always gives us an alternative look at the news. And Heather's going to read a bit of that now.
Happy about TK Maxx? No. It seems the new TK Maxx is not being met with enthusiasm that Belgarum predicted. Following the news last week that there is just weeks until the opening, Facebook followers of the Chronicle showed little excitement. Asked if followers were excited about the news, a couple simply replied, no, while others questioned how long it would be before the fashion chain departed. Richard Turner wrote, 6 months until it leaves. But it wasn't all criticism. Ashley Douglas wrote, moaning when there are no shops in the Brooks, moaning when a major chain opens up. Can't win, can they?
And now it's time for What's On. Well, at the Nuffield Theatre in Southampton, there's a play, a world premiere of The Shadow Factory by Howard Brenton. And this is all about the women who made Spitfires in various sort of factories and houses even, all over Southampton, because the original factory was bombed out. And it's in the new building. It's called Nuffield Theatre's Southampton City Venue. But if you'd like to have further information about that, there's a box office number, 02380671771. And it's on until Saturday, March the 3rd at 7:30 p.m. and as a matinee on a Saturday. It rhymes, doesn't it? Now, also in Southampton, running at the same time until March the 17th this time, at the Mayflower, as I said, it's Miss Saigon, the famous musical, which is vaguely based on Madame Butterfly. And if you want to go to that, it's in the evenings at 7:30 p.m. and 2 p.m. Thursday and Saturday matinees. And to book a ticket, you can phone the box office at 023 807 1811. On Saturday, March the 3rd, 7:15, there's Bach's St. Matthew Passion in Winchester Cathedral, and that's by Southampton Philharmonic Choir, Southampton University Philharmonic Choir, and Hanover Band Orchestra. Tickets are £12 to £32, and there's a booking fee, and it's from Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275, or you can go online to www.winchester-cathedral-org.uk. On Monday, March the 5th to Saturday, March the 10th at 7:30 in the evening and 2:30 Wednesday and Saturday, there's The Importance of Being Earnest, Oscar Wilde's very famous comedy of manners. And it's at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, and tickets are from the box office 01962 840 440. Now, on Wednesday, March the 14th, it's quite an unusual thing for us to put on What's On. It's called Don't Panic. It's at Winchester University, The Stripe. And this is, I think I'll read you the whole article because it's much more interesting, and I'll give you how to see it afterwards. This is for people who really like radio comedy, and it's called The Talk on Life, the Universe and Everything. Winchester University will be hosting a talk discussing life, the universe and everything with university alumnus and director of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Dirk Maggs, at The Stripe on Wednesday, March the 14th. The long-running radio series celebrates its 40th birthday this year and returns to BBC Radio 4 this spring with a new series featuring many of the original cast members. Now, Dirk is a prolific, multi-award-winning writer and director for radio, stage and screen, with credits including the Broken Sword series of adventure games, the 2015 Radio 4 adaptation of Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett's Good Omens, as well as directing three of the previous five radio series of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy from 2002 to 2005. Dirk will be talking about his work and his latest adventure with former BBC Deputy Director General and close friend Mark Byford. Dirk pioneered the use of Dolby surround sound in BBC radio and was one of the first nominees for the Directors Guild of Great Britain Outstanding Achievement in Radio Award. Now, don't panic, the event is free to attend, but attendees need to register, and you do this by going online to www.winchester.hobsonsradius.com, that's HOBSONSRADIUS.com, or you can call 01962 827 632. Remember, you've got to register before you can go. Saturday, March the 17th to Saturday the 24th of March, Chesil Theatre has Carlo Goldoni's very famous comedy farce, The Venetian Twins. It's roughly commedia dell'arte type farce. It's all mixed identity and lots of broad comedy as well as other jokes standing around. Now, this is on at 7.45 in the evenings, or there's a Saturday matinee at 2.30, and tickets can be available from 0333 666 3366, or you can go online to www.cheseltheatre.org.uk. The Winchester Chamber Music Festival this year runs from the 4th to the 7th of May. Full details of all performances from www.winchesterchambermusic.com, and tickets are available from Winchester Theatre Royal Box Office 01962 840 440. Let's look at the lighting up times for this week, and the lighting up time ends on Friday the 16th of February at 7:16 a.m. and it begins at 5:23 p.m. And on Wednesday the 21st of February, it ends at 7:07 a.m. and begins at 5:32 p.m. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you've got a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We'll continue with further items of general news now, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, young stars impress Oscar winner Colin. Oscar-winning film star Colin Firth visited the rehearsals for a youth theatre's production of a much-loved musical. The Hampshire-born star became patron of Encore Youth Theatre in May last year, having previously gone to Montgomery of Alamein Secondary School, now King's School, and Barton Peverell Sixth Form College. Fiddler on the Roof was set to be performed by the group at the Theatre Royal Winchester during this week's half-term, and the young people performed musical numbers for the world-famous actor, including Tradition, Do You Love Me and To Life, before asking him a series of questions. Colin Firth said, "Encore impressed me enormously when I saw them performing Fiddler on the Roof at rehearsals. The cast, voices, energy and authenticity were exciting. I wish them all the very best with their performance." Noel Jones, artistic director for Encore Youth Theatre, said, "We were delighted to welcome Colin Firth to see our talented cast in rehearsal. It was a tremendous boost for them ahead of our show at the Theatre Royal Winchester this month. It was really exciting for them to meet him and to hear about his experiences as an actor starting out in the business. He gave them some great advice. We're very grateful to him for giving up time in his hectic schedule to come and see us. We're so lucky to have such an inspiring person as our patron." And there's a series of lovely photographs, a portrait of Colin Firth himself, and then a series of pictures of the young people actually in performance and then looking delightful and excited.
And a very sad item here, US honeymoon turns to disaster. A Hedge End man's honeymoon turned to tragedy after the helicopter he was sightseeing in crashed into the Grand Canyon in the United States. Jonathan Udall, 32, is in a critical condition alongside new wife Ellie Millwood, 29, following the crash in which three of the pair's friends died. The victims have been named as Becky Dobson, 27, and brothers Stuart Hill, 30, and 32-year-old Jason Hill, a graduate from the University of Southampton. Mr. Udall's family, who live in Hedge End, are now preparing to fly out to America to see the former Wildon pupil and his wife, who were enjoying a honeymoon trip after marrying last year. His father, Philip Udall, told the Chronicle sister paper, The Daily Echo, "We are getting ready to fly out there now. We are desperate for news. We don't know much more than what's being reported online at the moment. We've spoken to the hospital and they are in a critical condition, but they told us they are currently stable." He added, "John and Ellie only recently married and this was their honeymoon holiday." The crash took place during a 50-mile-an-hour storm on the reservation near the Grand Canyon's West Rim around 5:20 p.m. local time on Saturday. Dramatic images of the crash site show the wreckage lying at the bottom of a canyon engulfed in flames. One picture appears to show a female survivor wearing jeans and a white top fleeing the scene as the fire rages behind her. Mr. Udall, his wife and another of the group's friends, Jennifer Barham, 39, were later airlifted to University Medical Center in Las Vegas. Pilot Scott Booth, 42, was also rescued from the crash. And there is a photograph of the bottom of the Grand Canyon, the rocks and stones there, with a flaming helicopter. Nothing but flames can be seen of it now at the bottom of the canyon.
City's latest sculpture is unveiled next to the Hampshire Chronicle office. A new statue has been unveiled in Winchester. The sculpture, erected by workmen in the small open space in St George's Street by the Hampshire Chronicle building, was erected on Friday morning and is the work of German-born artist and sculptor Holger C. Lontz. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I do think it's important that you know that there's this new statue in the pavement there. I think it's where there was a funny little scrubby bit. But anyway, just be aware if you're walking around there. The £10,000 installation is one of the final touches to renovations recently completed on Casson Block, which the City Council hopes will create a more welcoming atmosphere and enhance the area. Mr. Lontz's bronze and steel sculpture, Intersection, has been inspired by the history of the vicinity behind the Hampshire Chronicle Southern Daily Echo building. Featuring contrasting materials, the sculpture combines repoussé sheet bronze, created by hammering metal from the reverse side, with flat, polished stainless steel. The textures in the panels were created to represent rippling water, referencing the Upper Brook's history as part of the Roman drainage system. So it's at the junction between St George's Street and Upper Brook Street, and it might be quite interesting in terms of touching it if it's got different textures. So that's really what I wanted to be sure that you knew it was there, to be honest.
Water Garden is sold to unidentified buyer. A Winchester beauty spot has now been sold for more than £100,000 amid fears that it may be redeveloped. Concerns were first raised about the Water Garden when the Colebrook Street site was put up for sale in December. The listing by estate agents Belgarum said there may be future development potential, sparking concern among some residents. Now a bid has been launched to protect the garden following confirmation from a Belgarum spokesman that the site had sold in excess of the guide price of £100,000. The Chronicle understands an application has been made to Historic England asking that it should be listed on the grounds of its important design and special importance to the city. Previously, a spokesman for the City of Winchester Trust had said independent valuations have put the garden at approximately £10,000, and the City of Winchester Trust is extremely concerned that the asking price of £100,000 and an overage clause on future residential development potential means that the vendor is hoping to attract development. The Trust is liaising with Hampshire Gardens Trust, which is taking the lead on the best action to take to safeguard the garden. They've been in touch with the owner of the adjoining property, who is interested in purchasing the garden. However, following the latest update, a spokesman for the trust said, "I understand the buyer intends to leave it as it is." The spokesman added that along with Hampshire Garden Trust, it would be seeking to put in place as many belts and braces as possible to protect it. When asked who the buyer was, both Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust in Belgarum, declined to say. The land was owned by Lady Barbara Calcutt, widow of Sir David, before she died last year.
And now we have TK Maxx creates 32 jobs. The long-awaited TK Maxx store in Winchester will create 32 new jobs, the company said this week. The high street fashion chain, which is set to throw open its doors next month, is taking over a unit on the top two floors of the Brooks Shopping Centre. Spanning 1,437 square metres, the new shop will offer big labels for discounted prices. A TK Maxx spokesman said, "We're delighted to be opening a brand new store in Winchester. We can't wait for shoppers to walk through our doors and discover their own treasures. You never know what you might find. Pop by often, as there will always be exciting new designer finds and one-off gems for less every time you visit. There will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony and flower presentation for the first customer on the opening day of Thursday, March the 8th at 9 o'clock a.m. The opening date for the brand was announced after months of work to get the store ready. Its arrival forms part of a £1 million revamp at the Brooks to boost its appeal to shoppers currently underway. The shopping centre is currently home to stores including Primark, New Look, Waterstones, HMV and The Entertainer, but it also has several long-term empty units and has only been fully let for around a year since its opening in 1991. Costa has also submitted a planning application. It is currently undergoing a comprehensive cleaning, which has seen the building swathed in scaffolding. And this is accompanied by an interior picture of presumably a different TK Maxx store with rows and rows of clothes and people browsing through them looking for the one item that might be just suitable for them, as there's a huge variety and they are discounted every time they're not sold.
Spring clean for cathedral screen statues. The dust may be a little on the thick side. No duster has swept its surfaces since the 19th century, when Queen Victoria was on the throne. But now Winchester Cathedral is carrying out the first clean of the church's great screen for around 120 years. Thanks to funding from the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, the project will see conservationists carefully spruce up the stonework, which is more than 540 years old. There are four illustrations with this of various conservationists working very gently with brushes and tools to get rid of all the dust and dirt on that fabulous stone screen at the end of the cathedral. And because, of course, the photographs are closer up, you can not only see the statues, but also the detail of all the tracery on the screens, all of which, I presume, will have to be cleaned. They certainly are being cleaned in two of the pictures. This follows a programme of urgent repairs to the cathedral's presbytery, which has been carried out over the last 3 years and included re-leading the roof, restoring the windows and conserving the vault. Already underway, the operation's seen McNeil Conservation clean the great screen with soft brushes and a vacuum cleaner, removing loose dirt and dust. And according to cathedral records, it's the first time it's been cleaned since the 1890s.
This is an oh dear story. Woolly Hat Fair's civic funding in doubt. Council funding for Winchester's Woolly Hat Fair has been cast into doubt. At a meeting of Winchester City Council's Town Forum, it was revealed that organisers have asked for civic funding for the event to be cut. Live Theatre Winchester, who organises Woolly Hat Fair, receives grants totalling £34,000 to contribute towards the Hat Fair, Woolly Hat Fair and Theatre Royal. However, this year the group has only been awarded £24,000, sparking concerns the festive Hat Fair has been axed. The Woolly Hat Fair is an annual event which sees a series of live pop-up performances and art installations come to unlikely venues across the city during December. Last year's range of spectacles included a Christmas lighthouse keeper guiding travellers home at Winchester School of Art, living portraits at the United Church on Jury Street, and more besides. Senior Liberal Democrat City Councillor Kelsey Lerney said at the forum, "We gave them the grant to sustain the Woolly Hat Fair. They found they couldn't do it, and so asked for £10,000 less this year." She added, "It was not quite what they wanted and found it was more work than it was worth, so asked not to have the grant renewed this year." However, Live Theatre Winchester's chief executive Derek Newland said that council funding for the Woolly Hat Fair had never been guaranteed and was always agreed on a year-by-year basis. "If we get funding, we intend to once again deliver the Woolly Hat Fair," Mr. Newland added, saying they were exploring other avenues. "If we do not get the funding from the council, we'll look elsewhere. We'll be asking the council in the coming months for the grant," he added. A city council spokesman said Live Theatre Winchester did not request any funding for the Woolly Hat Fair in 2018-2019, but the city council continues to offer financial support to the Theatre Royal Winchester and the Hat Fair. And there's a nice picture of the Woolly Hat Fair 2016, which looks like a group of people with their woolly hats all singing, and it includes the Mayor, Jane Rutter, who, of course, is now a reserve reader for the Talking Newspaper.
And here we have "Be Still My Beating Heart, a Starling's Murmur Over City." And this little item is about a photograph which shows a beautiful bright blue sky with one of the massive murmurations of starlings that we have seen in Winchester recently, forming a perfect heart shape. "These starlings look as if they are feeling the love on Valentine's Day. The murmuration was recently spotted by Chronicle reader Anne Oddie over the Ford dealership on Eastern Lane, Winnell. Ms. Oddie of Eastgate Street, like many others, enjoys the birds' beautiful aerial manoeuvres as dusk settles over the city. She says the heart was captured without the aid of any technical alterations. The starlings have been in the news after their roost near the fire station on Eastern Lane was chopped down by the county council. Initially, the authorities said the reason was health and safety and because bird excrement was splattering police cars. But last week, the county council leader, Roy Perry, said it was because tree roots were in danger of damaging nearby buildings." Well, let's just hope we still get a beautiful heart-shaped murmuration next year.
Mm. Pride to return. Hampshire Pride will return to the streets of Winchester to celebrate the lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender community. It will be marching through the town between 2 and 3 o'clock on the afternoon of Saturday, February the 24th. Now in its fourth year, the LGBT plus community and allies will join forces for a show of unity on Saturday, February the 24th. The Pride Parade will set off across the city at 2 p.m. And there will also be an indoor street festival and market stalls at Hampshire County Council's Elizabeth II Court building at 3 o'clock. This will be followed by an evening party at 7:30 at Winchester University Student Union. Hampshire Pride is organised by the Hampshire LGBT Alliance, and all groups and individuals are welcome to join in. So if you know anyone who would like to, they need to meet at the assembly point at Winchester School of Art from 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, February the 24th, and for a 2 p.m. departure to march up through the town.
This is a bit of a niche story, but I think it's fun. Star Wars actor backs fire campaign. He's the legendary Star Wars actor living in a land far, far away. But it seems Hollywood's Mark Hamill has been keeping an eye on events in Hampshire. The actor, who played Luke Skywalker in the famous franchise, recently gave his backing to a campaign by Hampshire Fire and Rescue. The fire service used a picture of Hamill in the 1977 film Star Wars: A New Hope to illustrate its I Need My Space campaign. The campaign aims to educate drivers on how to react to emergency vehicles on the road. The Hampshire Fire and Rescue took to Twitter with Hamill's picture, accompanied by the words, "A spaceship is parked where? Hashtag I need my space." Californian-born Mark Hamill, 66, was clearly impressed by the campaign and gave it a like from his official Twitter account, which has more than 2.5 million followers. And that prompted the fire service to tweet again. "It's official. Luke Skywalker backs our I Need My Space campaign. You'd be Darth not to." Hampshire Fire and Rescue say the campaign comes after several incidents in which motorists hinder emergency service vehicles with erratic driving and poor parking. According to the service, the problem is worse than ever.
And here we have Vince Cable backs 5,200 homes plan on town visit. The leader of the Liberal Democrats has waded into the row over controversial plans to build 5,200 new homes on land near ancient woodland. The scheme for land between Fair Oak and Bishopstoke sparked a wave of protest amongst residents and even led to several Lib Dem councillors quitting the party. But on a visit to Eastleigh on Friday, Vince Cable backed the council's stance, arguing that the houses were desperately needed. Mr Cable, also MP for Twickenham, said, "The basic strategy the council has adopted seems to be right, which is to build ambitious housing developments combined with good environmental policy. My understanding is that they're trying to create garden villages to protect the green land between Eastleigh and Southampton. But the basic point is that this is an area which is desperate for new houses and there must be a substantial increase in supply." As previously reported, Borough Councillors' plans to build 5,000 homes on land near ancient woodland sparked a heated debate. When asked his thoughts about the proposed plans and their impact, Mr Cable said, "All new development is controversial. Everywhere I go is opposition to new developments. But there has to be a big expansion of houses because people cannot afford to buy them, and it has to be done in a green, sensitive manner. This is what I judge the council here is doing." Mr Cable also praised the work his party colleagues have done in the Eastleigh Borough. Talking about residents' concerns regarding the need for more infrastructure, he said, "My understanding is that the council is well aware of the necessity of having infrastructure with the new houses, and that's what they are planning to do." And this is accompanied not only by a photograph of Vince Cable with the borough councillors, Victoria Parkinson and Anne Wynne-Stanley, and a group of protesters in Stoke Park Wood in 2015, but also by a map of two different options, option B and option C, for the housing, which is between one lot, option B, between Bishopstoke and Coldham Common, and option C on the edge of Fair Oak and inevitably on patches of green land.
Double award win for heroic hospital porter. A Winchester porter whose quick thinking saved his colleague's life has picked up two awards at the annual ceremony. Daniel Spagna was honoured at the WOW Awards Gala Ceremony for his efforts, including CPR, to keep Royal Hampshire County Hospital worker John Baldry alive after he suffered a cardiac arrest. Speaking after his Rotary Club of Winchester and Corporate Services Division Award wins, Daniel said, "I'm over the moon. I was delighted just to be invited to this event. So I'm really happy to have won two awards. The response to what happened that night from everyone in the Trust has been lovely. And the most important thing is that John is back fighting fit now. I'm really grateful that I went on a first aid course so I knew what to do and that things panned out the way they did." There are lots of photographs surrounding this article, including one of double award-winning Daniel Spagna himself, a group portrait of all 16 winners, and also one of the critical care staff at RHCH, the Surgical Services Division, who won an award. The fifth annual WOW Awards, organised by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, celebrated the care and dedication shown by staff at the Trust hospitals in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke over the last year. Among the other winners on the night was the critical care team at the RHCH, which won the Surgical Services Division Award for their care of a patient with a life-threatening stomach condition. The Trust has received this year 3,024 WOW nominations for staff who'd made a difference to someone by going the extra mile. Staff can be nominated by colleagues, patients or visitors, with a handful of winners selected by the Trust's public governors each month.
Prison staff not properly trained. The death of an inmate at Winchester Prison has revealed that the Ministry of Justice allowed staff to work without suicide prevention training against its own policy. Sean Plumstead was found hanging in his cell days after asking a staff member the best way to take his own life. Now, responses from Carillion and the HM Prison and Probation Service relating to the 27-year-old's death show that government contracts failed to include the requirement for all prisoner-facing staff to undertake suicide and self-harm prevention training against Ministry of Justice guidance. A jury at Mr. Plumstead's inquest last October found the prison's failure to instigate self-harm support measures contributed to his death, and that a lack of training of agency staff was particularly concerning. Around 2 days before his death, Mr. Plumstead had asked a staff supervisor in the prison's clothing exchange the best way to commit suicide, but the staff member failed to record or report this. Mr. Plumstead from Hailing Island was due to be released less than a month later when he was discovered by his cellmate, and he died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on September the 18th, 2016. Following the inquest in Winchester, Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short issued a Prevention of Future Deaths report to both HMPPS and Carillion, highlighting the lack of compulsory suicide and self-harm prevention training. In a response published by the Chief Coroner, Michael Spurr, Chief Executive of HMPPS, said, "I accept that the requirement for prisoner-facing staff to undertake suicide and self-harm prevention training was not specifically brought to the attention of Carillion when their contract began, and I can confirm that a service manager's instruction will be issued immediately to ensure that Carillion and our other contractors are made aware of the requirement and their contractual obligation to comply with it. Both HMPPS and Carillion are committed to ensuring that all relevant staff are trained as soon as possible." Carillion said, "Having carefully reviewed our contracts with HMPPS, there is in fact no contractual requirement upon Carillion and its staff to undergo suicide and self-harm training, either as a business requirement, key deliverable, or at all. Accordingly, prior to the inquest of Mr. Plumstead, Carillion was unaware of the requirement for its staff to undergo suicide and self-harm training." Solicitor Claire Hilder of Hodge, Jones and Allen, who represented Mr. Plumstead's family, said that there was no provision for such training of Carillion staff shows the shocking lack of priority given to self-harm and suicide prevention in prisons, despite the latest safety in custody statistics showing the record highs of self-harm incidents.
And here we have the thriving country pub brought back from the edge. A country pub is redoubling its efforts to be named the best in the country after narrowly missing out on the top three this year. Just a few years ago, the Wanston Arms looked set to call time at the bar and close its doors for good. But since then, it has been named as the best pub in the region and narrowly missed out on a national prize. It was also named as the winner in the Mountain Warehouse's post-walk pint competition. The Watering Hole near Sutton Scotney had been set to close in 2015 with developers eyeing the site. But after more than a decade as a regular, current landlord Matt Todd dropped his life in corporate marketing and stepped up to buy the pub. "I believed I could make a go of it," said Matt. As previously reported, the Campaign for Real Ale recognised his efforts to turn the pub round and named the Wonston Arms as the best pub in the Wessex region last September, with the 15 regional winners competing for the national title. Speaking at the time, local MP Steve Brine said, "What Matt has achieved at the Wonston Arms is nothing short of incredible. He has turned a rather tired pub into a must-stop for anyone who understands good beer and good atmosphere are first on the team sheet in this business." But now Matt has revealed that the Wonston Arms fell just 2 points short of making the top three nationally, something he described as an incredible achievement, and efforts have already been poured into the 2018 competition. One of its unique selling points is it doesn't do food. Instead, a fish and chip van stops outside on a Tuesday evening so regulars can have a pint with their battered cod. There's also a curry night on Friday, and this, coupled with shorter opening hours, means there is always a buzz, according to Matt. He added, "My biggest asset is my customers. No one is ever turned away." At the bar, the Wonston Arms serves 4 cask ales from local Hampshire brewers, as well as national award-winning craft beer, and more than 50 artisan gins from around the world in its gin corner. And Ben Middleton, 45, trade union officer from Sutton Scotney, said, "There's great beers that are given the utmost care. There's always something new and an old favourite to drink. Matt creates themed events for people to travel for. Our Bristol friends plan their social calendar around Wonston events." And Kerry Evans, B&B owner from Wonston, said, "It's brilliant because it's so many different things to so many different people. It's somewhere to pop in for a family treat, meet friends for coffee on a Monday, somewhere to have a date night with my other half, and it's a great place to get together with friends." Neil Schoen, refurbishment contractor from Bullington, said, "It has always been a special pub, but Matt has taken it to a new level. Well-kept ales, an astonishing array of gin, and a friendly atmosphere make for a great pub to have as your local." And this is accompanied by some photos, one of Matt Todd, who swapped his corporate marketing for the pub, looking very happy about his decision. And also a lovely photo of the Wonston Arms, I assume last summer rather than this week, as everybody's sitting out in the garden in their T-shirts, looking very happy with great big swinging doors opening into the bar and hanging baskets all around, and a dove cot as well, advertising a Caribbean beach party. A barbecue. So when they say they don't do food, I think it just means they don't do the same food all the time. A rum punch disco, and even a photograph of the fish and chip van on Tuesday evenings with lots of people behind it sitting eating their fish and chips in the garden.
Landlord made tenant homeless after harassment. A landlord has been ordered to pay thousands of pounds compensation after illegally making a tenant homeless following a campaign of harassment. Private landlord Simon Knight was prosecuted by Winchester City Council after kicking out the resident of a home in Langton Road, Bishop's Waltham, in November 2016. Southampton Magistrates Court heard how Knight of Norwood Green had told the tenant to move out. But rather than taking the legal route, he attempted to push him out by removing the tenant's bedroom door and bed, padlocking the bathroom door, and disconnecting the power to the shower. Knight also failed to repair the oven door, washing machine, tumble dryer, and kitchen extractor fan. And when that didn't work, he changed the locks while the man was out, preventing access to his belongings, including essential medication, and leaving him homeless for 2 nights. District Judge Greenfield sentenced Knight to 12 weeks in prison, suspended for 2 years, and imposed a 16-week curfew between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. He was also ordered to pay £2,000 compensation to his former tenant, to pay all the costs of £8,490 and a victim surcharge of £115. Housing Councillor Caroline Hoyle said afterwards, "This result sends a strong message that the City Council will not tolerate rogue landlords taking advantage of their tenants' private rented accommodation being in an unfit or unsafe condition. We have a positive relationship with most landlords. The actions of this one were evidentially unacceptable and resulted in real hardship for the tenant he illegally evicted.
I'm afraid that concludes all the extracts for the week ending the 16th of February 2018. Let's say thank you to our editors, Jane Thomas, Linda Vincent, Keith Vincent and Jean Gardner, and also thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, to Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And to Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And, of course, to Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And then return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.